Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. I don't know what episode number.
I'm guessing 23.
I think, okay, all right. We'll have to edit that out if you're wrong. Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. I don't know what episode number. I am joined by Rue Madge. Hello, Rupert.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
Good.
I said Rupert there because a lot of people have been telling me that they think you're Asian.
Oh, really?
Because Rue Madge is
Rupert not an Asian name?
Well, I don't call you Rupert, I call you Rue Madge for the hip hop thing. Anyway, how are you?
I'm good.
What have you been up to?
Just looking forward to this.
Okay, good.
What's
a week?
It has been a week. No, 2 weeks maybe.
Yeah. And how's life?
Yeah, all good. Struggled to get here this morning.
Did you? Oh, this sounds like an anecdote waiting to happen. Go whapping, mate.
London Bridge was shut down.
Right.
Closed for a bear.
What do you mean London Bridge was shut down? Because I got the train to London Bridge. So it hasn't
But the actual bridge.
Oh, the actual bridge. Fine. Mm. So what did you have to do?
I had to come round to Southwark Bridge.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you said to me you were going to talk about your journey here, I assumed something had happened.
No, that's it.
No, literally just talk about the diversion.
Yeah, it's just an inconvenience.
Right, okay. Yeah. And that's who your story is for?
Well, more things might pop into my head.
I have had two Twitter-related incidents to tell you about.
Mm-hmm.
I appeared naked on Asian Provocateur recently.
Right? People generated some memes.
It's just fat shaming. it's just fucking fat shaming.
Go on, let's hear some of your faves.
So on this thing, I'm sitting next to the girl from the news channel who's naked and is obviously in very good nick, right? And people are going, oh, he's got... the number of tweets I've had that said, you've got bigger tits than her.
I was about to say that.
Just breathtaking. Just, oh, I was eating my dinner when this came on. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
I thought you were just a bit unattractive before I saw that. But shit like that.
Do you reply individually to
No, but I do think that this idea that people are not doing that anymore is misplaced.
Yeah.
It definitely happened to me. The other thing that happened to me is... I tweeted Donald Trump, right? So Donald Trump, who, when this goes out, will either have disappeared or be the ruler of the free world, right? Obviously, he thinks he's going to lose the election. That's why he's talking about it being rigged or whatever.
Yeah.
So he said the election's rigged. And I replied, just to him, it wasn't an open tweet. Go
Wait,
grab
was it a direct message.
Not direct message. He's not following me, unfortunately. But I've asked him so many times, follow back, but he hasn't done. I just tweeted him, I'll go grab a pussy, you daft twat, right?
Yeah.
Just a fucking stupid thing. Mm. The number of tweets I got from Trump supporters, it wasn't even an open tweet, man.
Wow.
It's like straight to him.
Mm.
One of them, I'll give you some highlights. Why is a terrorist even allowed to post on here?
Fucking
that was one
hell.
Of them. Another one was, go blow a goat, you curry munching fuck.
Are you telling me you're a vegan?
Another one was, this is the US, not Islamabad. Why don't you fuck off back there?
Jesus.
It was like full on, man. Like, it was mad. That's my story. Not as good as going to Southwark Bridge, but...
It's falling down.
But, you know, we've got to try, haven't we?
This is the bit where we introduce our guest.
BJ Yoda, bringing your fat big tape right here.
I am delighted, honoured... to say that we are joined by DJ Yoda. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir.
How are you? Duncan.
Yeah,
right?
Duncan it can be. I'm good, man. I'm good.
Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be here, man.
Like legendary DJ, I would say. I know it's wanky for you to hear
People
that.
Throw around words like legendary, but, you know. Yeah.
You'll take it.
This time it's real. Isn't it? I came to see you years ago in Reading.
Another Reading story.
Yeah.
I'm playing in Reading. What's today? Tuesday. Thursday night I'm playing in Reading.
Oh, are you? Yeah. Where are you playing?
Sub 89.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't... I don't know if Sub 89 existed when I saw it. It was years and years
Where
ago.
Would it have been?
It was... You were upstairs. Oh,
Reading doesn't Sub have 90. That many good clubs.
I know. I can't remember what it was. But... I do know.
He was upstairs.
I do know that one of my mates texted me. Now, don't worry, this story has an okay ending, right? Yeah. So he texted me to say, "Oh, fucking hell, Yoda's been shit so far, right?" And I was like, and then I said, "I can't see you." He was in a different room. Like,
that kind of thing happens a lot. I'd like good friends of mine that came to see me DJ the other day, and they were there for an hour. Like, and then they texted me like, "This isn't that good. Like, where are you?" And they were just in totally the wrong club. It happens a lot. Like,
that must mean there are people wandering around thinking that you're not as good as you are.
It happens all the time. People think you're shit, and they're watching the support DJ. A lot of people don't know what you like. DJing is a bit more kind of faceless than what you do. So people don't necessarily even know what I look like, what I sound like. They watch a whole thing and then think, "Oh, he was rubbish," or "He was brilliant." It wasn't even me. It happens a lot.
I remember a friend of mine, like when I was at uni, Westwood came down to do a uni gig, right? And Westwood is not a DJ that hides from, you know, I'd assume that everybody knows what he looks like. And one of my friends said, "When's Westwood coming down?" I said, "Mate, Westwood, he's literally right there." Just pointed at him. He goes, "He's white." Like, he literally...
Wow. Get him the program, dude.
Here's a little bit that you like to pull. How did you get into hip-hop?
So, anyway, lovely to have you on here. You are a big hip-hop fan. How did you get into hip-hop?
Both my parents worked in the music industry. They weren't into hip hop, but they were into music. My dad literally kept his record collection in my bedroom, so I was surrounded by records as a kid, surrounded by pop music. My earliest music memories were Top of the Pops, and I was into like Stock Aitken and Waterman stuff, and Kylie Minogue and Rick Astley and all that. And then I think around that time, kind of late 80s, there was this kind of hip hop pop crossover thing that happened. And you would get bits of scratching and samples in pop songs. And that stuff really appealed to me.
Right.
I'm talking about things like Climie Fisher.
I used to love Climie Fisher.
Massively uncool, but, it's what I got
into. That love changes everything.
But yeah.
By the way, just so you know, whenever any other alive. Music form is talked about, apart from Rupert, that's when Rupert really gets excited.
That's why I'm here.
That's when Rupert is most animated.
He's into the other kinds of music. I like everything. I'm into every kind of music.
Thank you,
but,
me too.
things like Cold Cut and Bomb the Bass, and you know, all these things had samples and scratches in, so that's kind of what led me into hip-hop. And then I started discovering hip-hop, and then it was just game over. Like, that was just I think from about 1990 to the 90s 1990 to 2000, I just listened to nothing and learned about nothing but hip-hop.
Right.
If it had a guitar in it, I didn't give a shit. If it had a house music beat to it, I didn't give a shit. I just was focus
pure.
Yeah, so that's where my kind of hip-hop nerddom area is. Then it got to 2000, I felt like things fell off a bit, and that's when I started discovering other kinds of music.
And that's a sort of a similar experience for a lot of people, I think, because I was the same, like, listen to nothing but hip-hop, and also only a certain type of hip-hop. Like, you know, like, it'd be like East Coast. I remember I went for
head
a phase
nod,
of just nothing,
lyrical,
but, just nothing but that. And
it
just
kind of disappeared up its own arse. In the same way that turntablism did. People get nerdy. Basically, white people take over and like make it just they just over nerdy it, and then it ruins it. It happens time to time. It will happen to like the current this kind of hip hop that you hear now. That's future. Yeah. You know, it will happen. White people take over and ruin it, and then black people will come up with something good again.
The thing is, it's interesting to talk about turntablism because. You did the competitions and shit like that.
I didn't actually compete.
Right.
I was never into the competing. I have no competitiveness about me whatsoever. I have no desire to prove that I'm better than anyone else because I'm not. A lot of people are better than me. So what I did was judge. I judged the DMC Finals like year after year.
So that's no pressure. That feels good.
I was a journalist. I was basically observing and not getting involved.
It's sort of... with the, because the thing is, with your like your mix, the mixes that you release and stuff like that, there's always a musicality to it that I would argue doesn't with turntablism. Like sometimes you pick up stuff and they sort of lose that. It's all about the tricks and stuff like that, which is impressive, I imagine.
But it's
if
not
you know how exactly if you know how it's done, that's impressive. But if you don't, to listen to as
doesn't
a thing,
sound great.
It's just like the key is with that stuff. Like, people just got too into being technical and showing off to other people that knew about that and forgetting about the fact that actually what you're doing in the first place, you're DJing, you're there to entertain first and foremost.
Yeah.
Mm. So that I'm always thinking about that. Like, is this fun? Full stop.
Yeah.
Is this funny or is it fun? If it's not, I'm not really into it. I don't really like making miserable stuff.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, and this is why it's interesting for me to talk to someone like you. I see myself as much as a comedian than as a DJ.
Yeah.
Like it's much, I put sets together like that, like you build and you structure things and create laughs at the right points. And and from the kind of comedians that I know, and I know quite a few comedians, I see myself more akin to what they're doing than to, I don't know, like some other DJ.
Well, I remember like my mates getting into like, one of my friends went through a phase of just buying Scratch Pickles practice tapes, right? And like
I got all that stuff too.
Yeah, but it's technically amazing, but you wouldn't put it on in the car, would you?
It's not relaxing music. It's not background music to like have your dinner to or something.
I know, it's just fucking.
You know, it's like that stuff is for sharpening your skills.
Yeah,
And I've got all that stuff too, and I do enjoy it myself as much as I enjoy a bunch of other stuff. But for me, the point was always like learn to scratch, learn to do that stuff to a level where I can then express myself to do other things.
Yeah,
not just to do that and carry on doing that and carry on doing that and carry on doing that.
Yeah.
There's people that I know that are way better technically than me, but they might not be as successful as a DJ because that's their interest is just getting better and better and better at doing that.
Yeah.
But it's not just about that. There's other things to do.
When did you start DJing from?
Oh, like I was at school, you know, I like worked, saved and bought up one turntable, then another turntable and practiced at home. The first thing, like, I would do is try and record mixes just for my own satisfaction or amusement, where I would like have samples from my favorite films and TV programs and put them on top of like the beats that I like from hip hop and try and just so that I could hear it all together because I like all the stuff. I want to hear it all in one place. Then I would like copy up those tapes for friends. Then I would start copying like 10 of them, 20 of them and take the tapes to record stores. And then it just grew and grew and grew.
Because like your version of the A-Team theme tune, it's like my fucking favourite thing ever, man.
I can't listen to it myself. I can't listen to anything that I have recorded.
Really?
Again. Yeah, yeah.
That's so interesting because I can't watch it. I can't watch it back.
Nothing at all.
If I've got to for an edit,
yeah, and exactly the same. If there's some reason that I need to hear it,
I would never. Like, I've come back and my wife has been like watching something that I've been, and I said to you, you've got to switch this off, otherwise I'm gonna have to leave the house.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
I'm exactly the same. I can't have my own music playing in the background, but it's just because I hear what's wrong with it. And things like, you know, that A-Team thing you're talking about, the first couple of how to cut and paste mixes that I did without a computer,
right?
Which, if you like, speak to any DJ that makes mixtapes now, it seems insane. I used a 4-track recorder, so I couldn't adjust, and everything was done with a pause button, and it wasn't mixed or mastered. All the professional things you're supposed to do with a mix weren't done with that. But it kind of does prove a point that you don't. All that stuff is rubbish.
Yeah,
like, it's not that important. I mean, I guess it depends what kind of music you're doing, but for my kind of thing, I don't know how important it is to sound professional. I think it's kind of more fun. I'm more true to the source material that I'm using for it to sound like a bit shit quality there, a bit good quality there, all over the place, a bit messy, because I think that makes it human.
Yeah.
And that's like, then it really is representative of like, look, I grabbed this bit off the internet, I grabbed this bit off of VHS, I grabbed this bit off a mini disc, you know, and it sounds like that, and I like that.
How did you get involved with Hip Hop Connection? Hip Hop Connection was like the thing that we all, like, I mean, I remember I was sort of thinking, I remember like trying to find, reading other music mags, like Mix Mag or something like that, and then have a hip hop
bit. Yeah, always awful, man. Yeah. All those like DJ magazines, the hip hop bit is always.
It's always like people just that one don't dude. Actually like it. Yeah, it'd be one guy that they get in, like, oh, Derek likes it. Just get him, like, we've had a couple of vinyls sent in, get him to listen to him and like script. But like, Hip Hop Connection was like a massive deal, right?
It was for years. And you know what? I wrote for the magazine for years. I had a DJ page where I'd like review mixtapes and all kind of DJ stuff. And I did some interviews. I went around. I've done some random things. Like, Dougie Fresh, the time that I interviewed him, was I'd have probably said it, he was a Scientologist. So I met him in a church of Scientology. And like, he rambled about that for ages. And I met Roxanne Shanté. All these kind of like people that, you know, I looked up to. I went to rappers' houses in San Francisco and stuff. I just had this few years of doing that. And I loved it. I enjoyed it. I think if I hadn't got into making music, well, there's no money in that world. You can't, you know, journalism, there's no money in it.
Well, did Hip Hop Connection, I mean, Hip Hop Connection, was it not even making money at its peak? Or was it, I mean, was
I have
it
no idea. Yeah. I wasn't in the offices, you know, I just dealt with the dude via email. Who knows? I doubt it, is the answer.
Yeah.
Ramesh, did you ever use the posters, like put them up in your room and stuff?
Yeah, I did have the posters all up in my room. I wrote a couple of letters.
Yeah.
And they got printed.
What did you write letters about?
I wrote,
dear sir,
complaining about the DJ page.
Well, why? Ka-ching! Must we be continually subjected?
Why is there no podcast about hip hop?
I wrote a letter about the fact that everyone was saying that hip hop is dead. The idea that hip hop is dead has been
hip hop keeps dying.
Years,
hip hop keeps dying and then keeps living again. So
I'd written this letter about it. Yeah. It was such a wanky. I think I've lost it now, but I mean, I'm sure if somebody found it and showed it to me, I'd be fucking humiliated. But it was wicked, man, that magazine. Yeah. Like,
I think the cool thing about British journalism about hip hop is that we're a step removed from it.
The other
thing that I used to do with Dan Greenpeace was Fat Lace magazine, which was a satirical magazine about hip hop, and the stuff we got away with in that magazine. I mean, you couldn't do that in America because you'd get shot.
Yeah.
But we were in London and away from that, and it gives you the kind of license to be a bit cheeky.
Well, I remember like reading HHC and thinking, this is great. And then suddenly my news agent started getting the source, right? And I thought, wicked, I'm going to get the source. Because obviously everyone used to talk about the mic system, you know, the mic review system, and everyone. And then I read it, and it's actually, I didn't enjoy it anywhere near as much.
Like, it's a different thing. It's more real. It's hip hop is a lifestyle for a lot of Americans.
Yeah.
We're in a different position. Yeah. I know I'm in a different position. I'm in a position of, I kind of recognise the luxury of it. I'm just like, oh, I quite like hip hop. I'm going to like listen to some hip hop on Spotify or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a different thing if you're like, you know, maybe if you're living in a ghetto in America, it's not just about, you know, how good is this album? It's a lifestyle. It's much more. And I'm kind of constantly aware of that.
How did you... I've got to ask about this. You do this thing in your live shows, which is incredible, which is where you have video footage as well as audio footage, and you cut all of this together. I mean, when I can see, I'd never seen anything like it. It just blew my mind. Like,
it's because the technology didn't exist until I did it. But one thing I love about it is one of the first shows I ever did of that. There's this MC that was kind of like introducing me, and then he came on after I finished. And I finished doing the show. It's one of the first times that people had ever seen video scratching on a screen in public. And he came on the mic after I finished. He was like, oh, shit. Whoa, I haven't seen nothing like that for a long, long time. And I was like, well, what did you see a long time ago?
It's a dream.
What did you see like in the 70s that was like that? I was like always, like I said, had samples from TV shows, movies, stuff, but audio samples when I was making mixtapes. And then they brought out these things called DVJs where you stick a DVD in it and you can scratch it like a CD. And it scratched the movie as well as the sound. And I was like, well, that's, you know, that makes perfect sense for what I do. I could have the actual film now, not just the sound from it.
Yeah. But I think the thing that was amazing for me was, is it wasn't, because to do that is, if you hadn't seen that before, it's impressive. But actually, it's like you said, it was a proper set where you felt like you'd been like taken through like I don't know if you can tell, I'm trying to avoid saying the word journey, but like...
Journeys by DJ.
But it was like that. It was a proper, like...
Yeah, you've got a structure. I really do think about my sets. As far as I can tell from other comedians I know, I structure my work the same way. I come up with a new show every year, new material every year.
Yeah.
You've got to build it. You have a big bit at the end. You've got to have a quiet bit in the middle. You know, you build it the same way. Well, I do anyway. And a lot of those shows that I do with the video, like the one that I did last week was at the IMAX. I've got this new show, which is a history of computer games.
Right.
So it starts with Pong, and it works the right way up to current day. But people sat down in the IMAX, ate popcorn, and watch me DJ.
Yeah.
And I really love that. I'm totally into the whole, anything where you can take turntables and DJing out of a club at 1 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Any other situation.
Yeah.
In a library, on a boat, you know, wherever. Just DJ somewhere different.
It is mad, isn't it? Because even if you do like DJing, you have to be willing to see it in that environment normally, in the environment of a club.
Well, I just think that's you know, that's a given. It's done. You know, Friday nights, 1 a.m, you can find a DJ in a club.
Yeah.
It's pretty boring, to be honest, because people are pissed and, you know, it's easy.
Yeah.
I'm speaking from a position because I've done that for years. Like, I know how to do that. I can turn up to a club at Friday night at 1 a.m, play the songs that people want to hear, they have a wicked time. But it's about, well, what next? What else can you do with this?
Yeah. Do you still get a buzz from doing it when you're at clubs and stuff?
Always. Like, so I might not be in the mood like 10 minutes before I'm DJing, and I might, you know, be tired or have a headache or whatever it is. But as soon as I'm actually behind turntables, I'm always good.
Yeah.
I'd be happy. You know, I had a terrible gig. Was it last weekend or the weekend before in Aberdeen? Worst gig I've had in years, actually.
But when you say worst gig, because I know
silence.
When I have a worst gig. When
I
have a bad gig.
Okay, there's two different types of bad gig. This was the bad gig where no one was there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
And in fact, not only that, I got there, there was about 30 people.
Right.
Then about 15 minutes into it, most of them were like, nah.
Wow.
They fucked off. And then there was about 4 people there. And then for the end of the set, there was just no one there. And it happens every now and then. It happens like, you know, that actually hasn't happened for a couple of years. And I still had a good time. Because my time DJing in a club is practice time, honing the set, working out things that work and don't work. You know, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't like that week in, week out, but to have one, it's character building. It's got to happen, man.
Yeah, I remember Rupert organised this. It was Camden Fringe. Do you remember me and Beckett came?
Oh, God, yeah, in the day. Rupert, he was emceeing.
Rupert organised this gig, all-day comedy gig in this pub. I mean, everyone was doing it, weren't they? But so Rupert's venue, not too bad, right? We're doing this thing. And it was Rob Beckett and I turned up. And Rob Beckett was emceeing, and then we didn't know how to start because there was nobody in the pub. So what do you do? So like,
hello,
me. Rupert goes to Rob. I was just start, and people are coming. And Beckett goes, I'm not fucking emceeing an empty room, mate.
Just watching people slowly filter
in. No
idea. It's a bit of a weird one. Well, sometimes like it'll be like that in places where I play, and I do just start, and then people just come in.
Yeah.
So you just got to give it a gentle start.
Exactly.
You definitely don't start with a fanfare.
Yeah, but it's not the same as fucking stand up, man. Where are you from? Oh, mate. Come
just back. Talking with them back to the audience.
What I love about my work is the variety, the randomness every week. I love traveling every week. I love going somewhere different, even if it's somewhere shit. I don't mind if it's glamorous, not glamorous, whatever. And then I'm doing different shows every week, and sometimes I'm doing a history of hip-hop AV show. Sometimes I do these kind of best of sci-fi AV shows. Sometimes I'm booked to do a DJ set and it's all reggae. Sometimes I'm booked to do a DJ set and it's all 30s music. You know, I love it just being different every week, and I really appreciate that about my work.
Jesus, I mean,
guess you're just doing the same stuff every night, aren't you?
What the fuck do you mean by that?
Well, there's not much variety there.
Are you serious? Mix it up a bit.
Do you mix it up? Do you sometimes do a completely different show to what you've done?
You're doing those AV sets now.
The week before.
The truth is, if I'm doing the tour, if I'm touring a show,
I'll
do that show. Yeah. But I will go into the crowd, or I'll drop bits in. So for example, last couple of nights I've been talking about that Trump Twitter thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So we'll mix it up like that. But at clubs, if I do a club gig, then I will just decide based on how it is. Do you know what I mean? Or sometimes, you know, you'll turn up and it's a certain type of, like, if you go and do, I don't know, if you go and do a Jonglers, which is like your sort of, basic comedy club setup, you just got to go bang, bang, bang.
You know how it's going to work.
Yeah, whereas if you do one of Rupert's gigs, Do you know what I mean? All these wanky kind of avant-garde tossers. You've got to, you've got to do something.
This is all great promotion.
I'm doing this tour at the moment. I'm touring this Stranger Things mixtape that I did.
Oh, yeah. I was asking about this. So what's the deal with it?
That's what I'm doing in Reading, actually, on Thursday.
Right.
So that show's got to be it's a really specific remit. It's like, it's the songs that I played in that mix and then some other songs that kind of fit into that category. So it really is like I've got a playlist that I can choose from.
Yeah.
But that in itself is different from other stuff that I do. I quite like being given the kind of the task of having to focus it on just that. But I'm glad it's only a few dates and that I won't be doing that year in, year out.
Well, I know I went to see Public Enemy, who they were just doing the album Fear of a Black Planet. And it was great, because obviously Fear of Black Planet is a great album. But at the same time, you're thinking, like,
I know what's coming next. Wonder when this is going to end. Probably after the last song in the album.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Rack your brains. Give it some thought. What was the first hip-hop album you bought?
Do you remember what your first sort of hip-hop album was that you... proper hip-hop album that you liked, or the sort of early stuff you're listening to?
Yeah, I can probably narrow it down to a few. I don't know about the single first hip-hop album I bought. I definitely really remember Ice-T, Power, Big Daddy Kane, It's a Big Daddy Thing, Salt and Pepper, Salt with a Deadly Pepper, Gangstar, Step in the Arena. So I'm guessing they're all around the same era.
Yeah. Big Daddy Kane... I used to argue with my mates about this all the time, because everyone used to tell me that Rakim was the greatest MC of all time, and I was convinced.
Big Daddy Kane's my favourite rapper.
Oh my god, dude.
He's still my favourite rapper, and that album is still my favourite album.
Yeah. Let it rain, put the pain with nothing to gain under the rapper cane. Because you can't maintain, I drain every brain and leave a stained flame to remain in my lane on path the road until the next episode that the BIGDADDY explode. Just like a bomb in Vietnam. But you know what? Like.
This is what I have to say about favourite rappers and favourite albums. It's so much to do with your age.
Yeah, I know.
And it's anything, especially if you're male as well, anything that you got into when you were 14, that's your favourite shit.
Yeah.
Full stop, for life.
Yeah.
And you ask any bloke, like, what did you like when you're 14? Do you love that shit now? Yes, he does.
And whenever people say music isn't what it's like, how it used to be, it's because... it's not how it was when they're like how it was when they're 14.
Of course,
that's basically it, isn't it?
And there are 14-year-olds now.
Yeah.
Who?
There's 14-year-olds now. They're going to start talking about why can't it be like Future?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like Future was the shit.
Why is Future in the past?
Yeah.
So you know, I totally appreciate that. And even some of my best mates who are into hip hop as much as I am, they might be 2 or 3 years older or younger than me. We've got slightly different favorite albums, favorite rappers for that reason, because hip hop moves fast. Compared to other genres, like 2 years, 3 years makes a big difference.
Yeah.
So I think that if I was objective, the stuff that's my favourite stuff is not actually the best stuff.
Yeah.
It's just there's a kind of rose-tinted spectacles thing going. It's the same as Star Wars. Like my favourite Star Wars film is Return of the Jedi, but that's because I remember seeing that in the cinema. It's not the best film. I just got better memories from that one.
My favourite as well, but and I get told that I'm scum for that because obviously the Ewoks are in it and shit like that.
I like an Ewok.
Expect some more tweets.
Do you still listen to any Ice-T? Right, Ice-T hasn't been talked about much on this podcast.
Yeah,
I was obsessed with that dude.
Me too. But this thing that I'm saying about if you're objective, was he actually good? I don't know, because a lot of the reason that I liked N.W.A. and Ice-T was because they said the F word.
I know,
and that was amazing.
I mean,
said the F word.
There was
and more.
There's freedom of speech where he says, you could suck my dick while I take a shit all day. Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, it was just the most incredible thing I've ever
heard. When you're 14,
heard.
What better than to hear someone say that?
Freedom of speech. That's some motherfucking bullshit. You say the wrong thing, they'll lock your ass up quick. The SEC says profanity, no airplay. They can suck my dick while I take a shit all day. Think I give a fuck about some silly bitch named Gore, your PMRC. Here we go, war. Yo, chick, what's the matter? You ain't getting no dick, you bitching about rock and roll. That's such a shit, dumb bitch. The Constitution say we all got a right to speak. Say what we want, tip. Your argument is weak.
So it's quite difficult to separate myself from that and know, was it actually good? A lot of Ice-T's beats weren't very good. I don't think he chose
no, I think
his instrumentals
right.
that amazingly. There are some exceptions.
And lyrically, he wasn't amazing.
Lyrically, he wasn't amazing, but he had a great personality, and that's a lot of it.
Well, that's the thing, because, like, actually, I know that everyone always compares Ice's, right? But Ice Cube, who was bringing out great records at the same time that Ice-T was sort of at the peak of his powers, I could go back and listen to Ice Cube's like Death Certificate and Predator Now, right?
Yeah.
And think these are great and still enjoy them. Whereas recently I went back to listen to like even OG, which is arguably, you know,
it's hard to listen.
It is a tougher listen. Like, I just didn't enjoy it as much. I thought, like you said, I think it's such a good shout. His beat the beat selection is appalling.
Yeah.
And also, just lyrically, actually,
it's juvenile. I mean, when you look back at it now and you think, like, how old was he? And like, we thought it was funny because we were teenagers, but you're probably a little bit old. Like, you should have kind of realised it's a bit juvenile. I think you're right. And that early Ice Cube stuff is amazing. First, the Kill at Will EP.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
that's a good one.
I think it stands up to listening. That is dated really well. And same with Death Certificate. Yeah. I remember getting the US import of Death Certificate because it had Black Korea and No Vaseline.
Oh, yeah, amazing.
Like, No Vaseline.
And you know, and for me, a Jew, to enjoy that album, you know it's got to be good. I was like, I don't care. Yeah, cuss Jews, whatever, it's wicked.
But then Ice Cube again. What did he do? Death Certificate, great. Predator, great.
It started to fall off there.
Lethal Injection was just,
all over,
oh my God.
All over, yeah.
It was done, wasn't it?
From that point forth.
Gorillas in the Mist.
Anything good.
Gorillas in the Mist. Yeah, I've got a nice story about Gorillas in the Mist. So.
What, the Lynch Mob?
Yeah, the Lynch Mob, yeah. So the Lynch Mob, they did Gorillas
good Lynch Mob talk, let's go.
Yeah. So they did Gorillas in the Mist, and they did, is it Chocolate City or something like that? Anyway, that was terrible. But Gorillas in the Mist, the title track from that album, amazing, right? Mm. I was listening to it in my bedroom. This is so bad. I was listening to it in my bedroom. I knew the words to it. I rapped the whole thing like I was in the video. Everyone did this, right? Where you did a rap video in your bedroom. So I did that. Absolutely nailed it, right? Smashed it. Looked to the door. One of my brother's mates has watched the whole thing through a crack in the door. One of the worst things that's ever happened.
What a song to do that to. Nice.
But yeah, Ice-T, I sort of wanted to like him. I wanted to go back and listen to it and really enjoy it, but I just didn't as much.
Yeah,
didn't I?
And they both fell off. I mean, musically, listening. Yeah. I mean, I was just trying to rack my brain for it. Has Ice Cube done anything good?
No, I went to see him and Naughty by Nature. They did like a double header tour, and they just did the Indigo at O2. And Naughty by Nature just came out and just went bang, bang, hit. Everyone went nuts. Ice Cube came out, opened with Straight Outta Compton, right? Yeah. Which is, obviously, you know, everyone went nuts. Mm. Then he started doing all the... And then he said, who wants to hear some of the newer stuff?
Yeah. Classic.
And then I actually...
Play the old stuff.
Yeah,
I'm up for going to any gig and saying,
play the old stuff.
Can you think of examples of rappers that have stayed good for that long?
From that era.
Since the 90s? Yeah. Or got better even?
I don't know about get better, but like, I'd argue like Pharoah Monch, like if a Pharoah Monch album comes out now.
You're as interested in it now as you would have been then.
I don't know if as interested,
yeah.
Because I used to properly jizz, like when, but like, I'd certainly like check it out, I'd certainly seek it out, but I think.
How about Doom?
Doom, fucking
Doom hell. Is an example, probably the only example I can think of someone who has got better.
Yeah.
Since the 90s. He's always been good.
Yeah.
But I think he's as good, if not better now, than he ever was.
That is such a great shout.
But there's not many. I can think of a few people who are like more irrelevant and on a lower level who have stayed good.
Yeah.
Like Master Ace is someone that I've always liked. Listen to any Master Ace album from any period. I think they're all good. Ed OG, more irrelevant, but another guy who's been good.
Yeah,
since,
yeah.
You know, there are a few like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Are there any other examples of...
Pretty much, almost every hip-hop act I can think of, their first album's their best album.
Yeah.
There's very few. There's a few that where their second album was...
Yeah, I think it's first or second, isn't it? Is normally when it...
But you don't get people whose like fourth album is their best album, do you?
No. is that only true of hip-hop?
I don't think so, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a good shout, though, because I remember just really desperately wanting Apocalypse 91 to be better than it was.
I haven't revisited that album for a while, actually.
It's got some good tracks on it, yeah. But, like, yeah, it wasn't... what's it got on it? Like, Night Train.
Arizona.
Shut 'em Down. By the time I get to...
Shut 'em Down remix, which wasn't even on the album, but that is the best hip-hop.
Yeah, that is...
Pete Rock.
Oh, mate. Yeah.
Is that the Pete Rock remix?
Yeah, it was Pete Rock remix. Yeah.
That was that is an absolutely banging remix. That does not work in a club.
Yeah. Is that right?
Every now and then I'll try it again. Is the best remix of all time? No, it doesn't work in a club. To the pole, because our soul took control from the education of a TV station. But look around, here go the sound of a record ball, boom and pound. When I shut them down, I shut them down. What happens? People just start nodding.
Yeah,
some of that stuff just hasn't got the energy. Hasn't really got a club energy. It works for that kind of weed smoking 90s nod your head thing.
Yeah, it's good for podcasts. Yeah, but you don't want to have that effect in a club, do you?
You can't really rave in inverted commas to a Pete Rock remix of Shut 'Em Down.
What about what are the best jump up like? I take it if you play Anthony Up, the place goes nuts.
Yeah, there's a few like that. I get bored of them. I have to find different versions or something new or interesting or a way to slip them in. There are like the absolute in case of emergency break glass is 900 number.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the, you know, if all else fails, any environment, 900 number.
So Pete Rock remix of Shut 'Em Down is a killer, as in Flattener. Are there any surprising Flatteners? Any others?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, a lot in the Venn diagram of like stuff for the club and stuff I listen to at home. There's only some stuff in the middle. Most of the stuff that I'm like, it's my favourite hip hop, isn't just not club friendly.
Yeah.
I think I like a more kind of mellow kind of hip-hop than
a
hyper kind of hip-hop to listen to at home. But that's probably because I'm in the club every week, so, you know.
Yeah, you just want to chill out.
Can you remember your first set in front of an audience?
Yeah.
Remember the playlist, the running order?
It was in Golders Green, which in itself is amazing if you know London, because you'll know that there is no club in Golders Green. But there kind of is, because there's this basement under the bridge that is dreadful. I was still at school. My mate Damien came down to help me. And I played...
But he gets him free, because did he carry your...
Yeah, did all that.
I would have loved to. Yeah, but that was a job I wanted, man.
The record carrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just get in anywhere.
But then here's what he did. To help me whilst I was DJing, he thought he'd take the needle off the record and put the record back in the sleeve, because he thought that was the record that wasn't playing. It was the record that was playing. So I was just playing a song and then just the needle lifted up. This music stopped whilst he put the record. I was like, dude, what are you doing?
Everyone thought it was part of it.
Yeah.
And what are you listening to at the moment?
I don't just listen to hip-hop. In fact, I listen to, like, as much everything else as hip-hop.
Yeah.
And there is a ton of hip-hop out there, and most of it I don't like.
Yeah.
But the stuff that I do like, I think there are gems to find.
Yeah.
I am halfway through this Dram album, D-R-A-M. I don't know how you say it.
Yeah.
And I'm really into that. I think that's wicked.
That's just literally just come out, right?
Yeah, came out this week.
Yeah. Because... Nihal that has been on this podcast, he sent me a picture of the album cover.
It's an amazing album cover.
Grinning with like holding his dog,
with a puppy,
right?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, if you wanted any evidence of how much hip hop has changed,
yeah, exactly. you would not get that in 1989. I think that's the Chance the Rapper album has been my favourite hip hop album of the year.
It's so good.
It's stunning.
Yeah.
Like there's some proper sublime moments in it.
It's really good.
I've loved that. Then I'm kind of into this kind of more underground, head noddy, lyrical kind of world, and there's a few really obscure artists in that world that I really like. I love Rock Marciano.
Right, yeah.
There's a guy called Carr, K-A.
Is Rock Marciano the same Rock Marciano that was in Flip Mode?
Yeah.
Right.
But he's kind of changed his style up.
Right, okay.
He's become much more kind of Alchemist produced.
Oh, really?
You easily squeeze heat from the Tudo. Blue Hugo to put a new hole in your culo. OG Kudo, your whole Steve Sudo. 10,000 in key, you can't lose. Frank is Pudo.
I had an argument with him on Twitter.
Rock Marciano.
Not an argument, discussion. About what Dre's best work was.
Dre's best work?
Yeah, because he said it was NWA's second album. And I think
subjective.
It's The Chronic.
I think it's The Chronic as well.
Yeah, but we had... Well, don't tell him that on Twitter, mate.
I won't. I'll avoid tweeting Rock Marciano now.
But I didn't know. I didn't even know he was still doing stuff. So
yeah, he's an example of someone that's got better over time.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of albums that kind of... tangentially hip hop, but I think the Avalanche's album's really good.
Yeah.
And that's good, you know, it's got Danny Brown on it, who I like. I like anything Doom's on. I like Run the Jewels.
Yeah.
I think they're really good. And I actually kind of I do like a little bit of Future and of that world.
Yeah.
But I have to dip into it and I really have to be in the mood.
Yeah.
I don't think I can point to an album of that kind of trappish stuff that I love.
It is a bit
And I don't like Drake.
No,
I just don't like him. I can't. There's no exception. I don't know a Drake song that I like.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
It's weird, isn't it? Because what happens is Drake is one of those artists where I'm not into him at all. But there's a couple of my friends that I respect their opinions and their taste, and they're so into him that I think I must be getting this wrong.
Yeah, I feel like that sometimes. I'm like, what am I missing here?
Yeah.
I don't get it. But it's. It's the worst kind of bad for me because it's boring.
Yeah.
That's what I don't get. It's like, I'd rather be offended by it and think it was really shit and out there.
Yeah.
But it's just dull. It's just, I don't get it. It's just, it's like he's found the lowest common denominator that is going to offend as little people as possible and is coasting by doing that.
It feels a bit by the numbers. Oh, that sounds, I'm being a bit harsh there, but it does feel a little bit. There's nothing to it. It just feels quite insubstantial.
I like the song. It's quite old now. The one with Eminem and Lil Wayne. And I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, look it up. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Drake's the worst one on it.
Last name ever. First name greatest. Like a sprained ankle, boy. Ain't nothing to play with.
Oh, man. Hip hop gripes.
What do you not like about hip hop?
That.
Yeah.
Hip hop's got massive. Like, hip hop is now. Pop culture, it's everything. You can find anything within hip hop, religious stuff, nutters, boring stuff. You know, it's like saying, what do you not like about the world to me? Because I just grew up with that and it's too big a thing. So the things that I don't like in hip hop are the same things that I don't like in the real world as well.
Well, it's interesting because, like, most of the time when you say to somebody, what do you not like about hip hop? And most of the guests that we've had on here have said the misogyny and the violence, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is a valid answer, but I think that is focusing on one really tiny part of it, because we do know that there's...
I mean, how much hip-hop is not...
I know.
How much misogyny and violence is there in hip-hop compared to misogyny and violence in the real world?
Yeah, exactly.
Hip-hop? It's probably about the same.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that people's idea of what hip-hop is... I think their perception of it is that's the type of... That represents it all, do you know what I mean? And so they're not talking about the other stuff, you know, they're not talking about the backpacking stuff, they're not talking about the sort of ethereal, different, you know, the sort of whole range of it. It's just, it feels like that's the ongoing perception.
Some of my favourite hip-hop songs are misogynistic and violent.
Yeah, I mean, that is.
And it doesn't mean that I'm a misogynist or a violent man.
No.
Definitely neither of those things.
No.
I would like to be, but there are films that are violent that are amazing, so there can be hip-hop songs that are violent and amazing as well. But the stuff that I don't like in hip-hop is just what I don't like in the real world. Boring stuff. People who just aren't original.
Yeah.
You know.
And what's your opinion of, we ask everyone this because I've got to be in my bonnet about it, live hip-hop. Have you got best gigs that you've been, or anybody's blown you away?
Yeah, kind of my opinion on live hip-hop is the same as what I was saying about hip-hop these days. There's so much of it that, there are some gems to be found, but it's probably about 2% of what happens.
Yeah.
And I'll probably just trot out the same names that everyone does because they're the ones that are good at it. But, you know, The Roots are amazing live. De La Soul are amazing live. I think Kanye's amazing live.
When did you see Kanye live?
Not for a while.
Yeah, because I saw. I think it was like the Glow in the Dark tour that I saw.
Can I tell you what I think about Kanye?
I
could spend a whole podcast talking about I think about Kanye, because this has been a pivotal last year for me with Kanye. I loved him when he came out. I loved all his albums.
Yeah.
I was the big Kanye supporter.
Hold on, you liked College Dropout?
College Dropout's my favourite.
Late Registration, you liked?
That's my least favourite, but I still like it.
808s and Heartbreaks?
Love it.
Love that album?
Probably my second favourite Kanye album.
Shit, get the fuck out of it. Yeah. Are you serious? That's your second favourite Kanye album?
Yeah, I stand by that one, yeah.
Holy shit, okay. fine, I mean...
It works for me. I just think it's kind of atmospheric in a way, and it's original. No one else
is
doing
original, that is true, yeah.
It had a real sound to it, a real clean, amazingly produced, technological but soulful, amazing melodies. The production was wicked. I love the artwork of it. It's a wicked album.
Okay. I'm going to listen to it again.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to come back to you.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, if you're not into the idea of Kanye singing, you're not going to like it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you won't get past that.
Sorry, you were saying it's pivotal.
Yeah,
year.
So I stood by him. I loved it all. I love Yeezus even, which was a bit out there.
Yeah.
But then after that, I'm like, I can't stand by this man anymore. I can't support him.
What was the tipping point?
I don't know if there's one tipping point. It's just everything that's happened.
Yeah.
The fashion thing.
Yeah, mad.
The like dickheadness taken too far.
Yeah.
The Kim Kardashian, the paparazzi, the bullshit. And then... I can still stick by all that if he then releases an amazing album, but his last album to me has been the worst thing he's done.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, okay, I can't stand by this anymore. I can't do it. I loved his old stuff so much, but I just feel like I don't know what he's on.
He's recently come out and complained about Jay-Z not being a good enough mate to him, hasn't he? Have you seen this?
He just talks any amount of shit
that pops into his head.
Do you know what? It's like Trump. You just like find some shit to talk that will make people talk about you. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter the morality of it. Just find some shit that people will say, oh, he said that.
It's a really funny little soundbite that they've taken from him, because like somebody said, because obviously Kim Kardashian got robbed recently. Mm. And she's like become a relative recluse as a result, which is obviously not nice. But Kanye said, Jay-Z phoned me up and said, how are you feeling and stuff? You know, come round, see us. My kids haven't played. Our kids haven't played together. Do you know what I mean? Like, what
really
the fuck?
Just call him up. Kind of like domestic, kind of suburban.
I mean, just fucking
did
phone
he do that
him.
On Twitter? Yeah.
He was in an interview, actually. He said it out loud, I think.
Just send him a text.
I know, what the fuck? You don't want to come around now. What do you do if you're Jay-Z then? You turn up, hi, mate. I saw what you said in...
Yeah. Sorry, he needs to have a concert. He needs to, like, book a gig at Madison Square Garden so he can tell everyone. Oh, yeah. And Kanye, like, have this conversation in front of 200,000 people. It's stupid. All that stuff is stupid. I don't care about celebrity stuff. And that's what a lot of hip-hop's become.
I wonder if he's... The thing is with Kanye is I'm not saying I couldn't possibly claim to have any insight into why he married Kim Kardashian, but what I would say is he's always considered himself as somebody that he's a genius and like, you know, he's this next level thing and that everyone's going to be talking about him. Him getting into that sort of lifestyle has elevated him above and beyond what his music would have ordinarily.
He's kind of born to play that role.
Yeah.
I kind of get that. But it's just not the stuff that interests me. And this is like a really pretentious thing to say, but I love the stuff he did before he even had an album out. But if you listen to all those like demos that he did before his first album, there is actually tapes of them. There's whole mixtapes. I think there's three or four of them. All that stuff, really raw, just loops of soul stuff.
Yeah.
I never really understand why people thought he was a bad rapper when he first came out. There's a lot of talk about, oh, he wasn't a good lyricist.
I don't agree with that. No, because but now... I think he works less on his lyrics than he used to. But his lyrics, punchlines, like everything you'd want from someone.
I love
all
that stuff. And College Dropout never gets boring. I listen to the instrumental version of that album quite a lot, just because the beats are just incredible.
Yeah.
Love that.
Plug one, plug two. Guest plugs for you.
Is there anything that you're up to at the moment? I mean, Ian talked about Stranger Things. You're touring that at the moment, right?
Yeah, I am. I guess, I don't know when this goes out.
It'll be, I don't know, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, 4 weeks.
Yeah, something like that.
The tour will be over by then.
Oh, okay.
Well, and in fact, the last place, the London Day, which is sold out, so there's nothing to plug.
Well, shame on you for missing it, then.
Yeah, you're all idiots.
This is the other thing I want to talk about is you had Carl Donnelly support you. How did this on tour? How did this come about?
So, like, one of my tours, I was just, because I always get to pick who the support artist is on my tour,
right?
And I just wanted to try something different. And because of that stuff, I was kind of saying to you before about, like, I really see this big connection between my style of DJing and stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I was like, let's see if it worked to get a comedian support me on tour.
Yeah.
So I approached Carl about it.
So did you know Carl at this point?
At that point, I only knew, forgotten his name.
Right.
Some dude who knew him.
Right.
So I watched some of Carl's stuff online. I was like, he could be the person to do this if he's brave enough. And fucking full respect to him for saying, yeah, I'll try this. Because I think that takes balls, man. To I'll turn up a bunch of hip-hop clubs and try doing some stand-up comedy. Let's give it a shot. And he did it.
How did it go? There must have been somewhere it just went absolutely...
It was mixed. It was mixed. And to be honest with you, what we found out pretty quickly is that essentially the more cultured and intelligent a crowd you're playing to, the better it worked.
Right, right, right.
So some places he smashed it. And then other places that weren't so much like that, he was literally, oi, turn the music back on.
Oh, God.
You know, really awful. God. And he powered through it, and I fucking rate him so much.
I mean, he's the right guy to pick, because one, he's one of the very best. I think he's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And two, he's got that mentality where he wouldn't let it get to him.
And also, he's been one of those punters in the crowd.
Yeah.
He gets going to gigs and that kind of thing. And he just understood it on a level where it didn't piss him off. He was like, yeah, fine, I'll roll with those punches. I think it was worth it. I mean, you'd have to ask him, but I think it was worth it for the ones where he smashed it. Just to, like, I did it. Like,
yeah,
I smashed it. I killed it to a crowd before a DJ. And those people that were people that came out to dance.
Yeah.
And instead, they got some comedy.
Yeah.
So I really respect him for that. And I saw his show in Edinburgh this year as well. And
Badman Tings.
Yeah. Which has the best poster of any gig I've ever seen. I just keep showing that photo to people like who don't know who he is. I'm like, look at this. I just think it's a wicked picture.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing show as well.
I can admit now to the listeners of Hip Hop Saved My Life that we did do this podcast. We didn't have Carl on.
Yeah.
And then the file got corrupted and we completely lost the whole fucking thing.
Oh,
so
no,
we're
going to
get
again.
We're going to get him back on.
What hip hop did he talk about?
What did he talk about? Oh, he talked about... He loves Kanye.
Yeah, he does.
He loves it. In fact, everything he said about giving up on him this year, he's almost in direct opposition to that, actually. So
because he thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah, he thinks it's amazing.
Would you do that again? Would you get a comedian to support you again? Or
If I found the right person, I wouldn't rule it out. Mm. I'd be more up for just trying some other random shit, like a snooker player or an acrobat.
Sounds good. Which
great
snooker player?
Risotto chef. Anything, whatever.
Listen, thank you so much for coming in, man. Really
my
appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Nice to be here.
Cheers. All right, see you later, Rupert.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.